Siren Radio.
Indeed it is. Anna, in terms of your activities and so on, I feel it's only right that we did the full introductions to the team. Just a few little samples from Graham Lloyd, who you can actually see in person this weekend, this Saturday effectively, at the Newark Book Festival. It's going to be fantastic. Graham, originally based in Pembroke, went to school in Lincolnshire, joined the Western Mail in Cardiff, back in the last century, actually, Graham.
Not far off the last century, but early 70s, actually.
Precisely. Some of the texts that he's actually produced, which in many ways I'm sure will have passed through your libraries back in the day, would be things like Terry Yorath's Life Story. I mean, after all, with that, Graham, presumably, Gabby would have been a wholly different person, really.
Absolutely.
Gabby Logan.
I mean, people don't realise that Gabby Logan
was Gabby Yorath.
Absolutely. And I wrote his autobiography. Well, I ghost wrote his autobiography.
Those were the days where footballers, effectively, they were so busy learning their trade that somehow just getting those sentences together, you needed a wordsmith to do that.
To be fair, the key thing when you write these autobiographies, I've done two. One was with Terry, the other was with Jan Molby, the former Liverpool player. And the best thing is when you've done it, somebody says, I read the book, it sounded just like Terry
exactly.
like Jan, because you spend a lot of time with them transcribing the interviews and then you have to knock it into shape. But the key thing is to make sure it sounds authentic.
Personally, I was very shocked back in the day when I realised that Alan Ball, Bobby Moore and indeed Kevin Keegan didn't actually write their weekly columns in Shoot magazine. It's just, you know, it's like finding the Tooth Fairy wasn't real or there's no Santa Claus.
Right.
Of course there is, as we know. Chloe, enthusiasm, dynamism, etc. You're too young to remember Jan Molby in the centre of Liverpool.
I am indeed.
No, but he was a good player. He used to sort of park himself in the centre of the park and literally just spread balls around,
that's
really.
That's a very good, very good description. He was a wonderful footballer.
Was he a Liverpool player?
He was.
Brilliant!
Yeah.
I love Liverpool.
Well, he played with Ian Rush, he played with with Kenny Dalglish, and he played with Alan Hansen and Mark Lawrence. So,
exactly.
Very good pedigree.
And he was Danish.
He's Danish, but had a great Scouser accent.
Indeed. He was the most Scouse Danish person I've ever encountered. It's truly awesome. Anyway, meanwhile, you've been exploring a variety of past Victorian friends, I noticed, according to your website updates, Anna. You've been checking out the likes of Charles Darwin, amongst others.
Yes, I have. And it's more Mr. Huxley that interests me, because a friend of mine who recently passed away, his grandfather or great-grandfather was Huxley. And it's only when I went to visit him at home and I saw Thomas Huxley's photograph on the piano, I said, oh, he's not one of yours, is he? And he said, yes, he's my great-grandfather. So I remember them from my sort of days of doing Victorian studies. And it was like a trip down memory lane going through.
Thomas Henry Huxley, 1825 to 1895, now looking down from on high and saying, come on, England.
Alex, your knowledge is amazing. Where are you getting it all from?
Oh, it's amazing.
I think I've just realised there's a screen in front of you. You're not very subtle, are you?
It's the 21st century. That's the whole thing, Graham. And we like to make use of our information to therefore distill it, siphon it down, and then our listener can hopefully co-present, co-host the whole thing.
Wonderfully
stuff.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to tease ahead to how's that? The Six Sixers Ball Mystery.
Yeah.
But the tease, and I'll explain this to Anna and Chloe, and of course you, dear listener, that the mystery is that it's not a cricketing book, it's not a book about cricket, it's a book about a possible fake. Or indeed, you would say, not a fake, a definite fake.
Absolutely. Briefly, what happened in 1968, 50 years ago, was a man called Gary Sobers hit six sixes off a bowler called Malcolm Nash down in Swansea. And it had never been done before in over 150 years of the game. He did it. And in 2006, the ball that was allegedly hit four six sixes was sold by Christie's, the auction house in London, for £26,400. But, and this is the key thing, it can't have been the ball because it was the wrong make. The ball bowled by Malcolm Nash to Gary Sobers was made by Stuart Surridge, and the ball that was sold by Christie's in 2006 in London was made by Duke & Son. And it is as simple as that.
It's a fake!
Well, you can't really use that word fake.
Of course not. Not after Donald Trump.
No, absolutely. Well, That's one of the reasons I keep going. I wrote my first book 10 years ago called Six of the Best, Cricket's Most Famous Over, when I sort of hinted that there was something wrong with the ball.
I think we might have spoken telephonically about that. Yeah. In fact, I'm fairly certain we have done.
And then 5 years ago, How's That, the Six Sixes Ball Mystery came out, and I confirmed, I proved that it was not the genuine article. And what I'm doing now, because it's the 50th anniversary, I'm going around all these literary festivals, including Newark, spreading the message and explaining to everybody that the ball, the world's most famous cricket ball, is not the real deal.
I mean, that's like finding out that Pickles rescued the wrong World Cup.
Absolutely. It is, I mean...
The original FIFA World Cup Jules Rimet trophy was actually stolen and was rescued by a dog called Pickles back in 1966.
Yes.
I know, way.
No way.
Exactly.
I think what it is, Alex, I've always been a journalist and I'm interested in facts. Mm. And what appalls me about this is that there is so much evidence to prove that the ball is not the real deal. Mm. And yet... nobody really, apart from me, seems to be too worried about it. And Christie keeps saying, we have a signed certificate of provenance, signed by Gary Sobers, the man who hit the ball, and that's good enough for us. And my view is, it ain't good enough, because it's wrong, and they didn't bother speaking to a lot of people, including, who would you have thought might have known the make of the ball? Apart from the batsman? Surely the man who...
bowled the thing.
Who bowled it? Malcolm Nash. Mm. Did he get a phone call from Christie's?
No, obviously not.
No, he didn't.
Look, checking your sources as a journalist, for
Absolutely.
Goodness sakes.
Well, no.
How passé. I mean,
can't
really.
Can't they do something about it now?
Well, this is what I'm trying to do, Chloe. I'm trying to build up... In fact, I don't want to dominate the conversation, but just to let you know,
I am
in the process of contacting lots of cricket-loving celebrities and politicians, and so far I have the backing of... the Prime Minister, Theresa May.
Nice, good.
Yeah. The world famous best selling novelist, Geoffrey Archer.
Like it.
Yeah. The former England cricket captain and Sky Sports presenter, David Gower. And my latest addition to the roster, Rory Bremner, the comedian. And he said to me, it's a great story, blah, blah, blah. He said, it would
have. Can I have the movie rights?
He said to me, it would have been different, Graham, if I'd been bowling to Gary Sobers. He'd have hit 7 sixes.
There you are. That is a message which we'll return to when we speak to John Wenham, our ace umpire, a soul, in a few moments' time. We've got William Coles as well. Anna, see what the magic Thomas Henry Huxley kind of led us to. You know, all of that, right the way through to cricketing delights, are not as the case may be, and something which VAR would basically make sure could never happen when we actually deconstructed Chloe's latest single on her last appearance a few weeks ago, because I was a bit concerned about, was the hand over the mouth, was the hand in the mouth, etc. Either way, VAR would prove this is not appropriate. Okay?
Oh, gosh. I agree.
Exactly. So, the last two questions for yourself, Anna. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you, Anna. And don't go jumping on any cars. I know you're very tempted to, but at the end of the day, it's not... It's...
Have you heard about that?
Oh,
how terrible. People have been... I know they get excited, but they took it the extra mile.
Exactly.
You just don't do that,
jump on people's cars. It's not as though it's Italy in 1980. Yeah, please, steady on. You've got to have... However... Will you be back again next week, Hannah?
I would love to. Thank you for the offer.
And would you like to introduce Chloe Rowe's singing lungs for us? So off you go.
Yes, our amazing singer.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Totally amazing singer.
Take it away.
Yeah, exactly. It's Chloe Rowe's It's Lungs on Siren Radio. Is that kind of breathless anticipation being echoed in Edinburgh with the fascinating world of the semi-finals of the World Cup? William Coles?
I don't know about Edinburgh. I am down south in London at the moment. In Edinburgh, I can assure you, they will all be cheering for the Croats.
Oh, come on. I mean...
I'm afraid so.
William, last week we had this discussion, and I insisted that you should really have actually made every effort to put some flags of St. George around your house just to kind of share the joy with our fellow British citizens, who I know north of the border would be delighted to actually sort of support Gareth...
Southgate.
Thank you. His boys. And it is Waistcoat Wednesday. Are you wearing your waistcoat?
I will buy a waistcoat if we make it through to the final. Yes.
You've said it there. You've sorted that thing through. You just heard the fabulous Chloe Rose there. Chloe's back with us in the studio again. Doesn't lungs get better every time you hear it?
I thought it was wonderful. Yes. I was thinking, that's a catchy little one. Where do I remember that one before? Thank you for reminding me.
That's perfectly okay. We're having a kind of sporty theme to the programme today because, as well as Chloe, we've got the amazingly talented Graham Lloyd, author of The Six Sixers. In addition to that, he has produced Cardiff City's official centenary book, One Cap Wonders, also, is another production, which was footballers who played at once for their country. The Cardiff City centenary book was, of course, Come On City.
It was.
Got a bit excited by that because I thought, are you talking about Manchester City, my own side? No.
It's always a problem when you write a book about a football team because so many of them are called either City or United.
Rovers.
But it was called Come On City, 100 Years of the Bluebird. Yeah, it came out in 1999.
Jan the Man, we've already spoken about, from Anfield to Vetchfield.
Yeah.
And, of course, my particular favourite, just for the title alone, One Hell of a Season. Sorry, I felt myself breaking into a Scandinavian accent there. Who would have thought it's about Lincoln City and Boston United?
Absolutely. It was when Lincoln City almost went up in 2002, 2003.
And of course, since then, trophy... Panorama, check
all,
a trade.
All changed. Genius. All changed, what but they've done say? Really well, unlike Grimsby Town.
We did really well years ago.
Exactly.
We're still doing great.
Alan Buckley played for you. You're still in the league.
Exactly.
One of my students is the public relations officer for Grimsby Town. She's celebrated.
That's amazing.
Exactly. So there we are. That's from Christine Green. I don't know quite where we're going with respect to this one, William, but as you can gather, we're developing a whole range of things here. We won't even speak about Business Week Wales, which, of course, was an awesome programme that was produced, as well as your work with the World Service. However, William, would you like to quiz Graham a little bit about how's that and the Six Sixers ball mystery?
The Six Sixes. Is this anything to do with Gary Sobers?
Well done, William, yes. He was the man that, for the first time in the history of the game, hit six sixes off six deliveries back in 68. And if you do your maths, you know it's the 50th anniversary this year. And as I was saying just before, I've proved beyond doubt that the ball sold by Christie's in London in 2006 for £26,400 is not the real deal. Because it's the wrong make. And and it's a very touchy subject because Gary Sobers is regarded as the greatest player to have ever played the game. And people can't really get their heads around the fact that he is not involved in anything underhand, but his name is associated with something underhand because he signed a certificate of provenance to say that this was the ball that he hit Malcolm Nash around St Helens in Swansea for, and it's quite clear that it's not. So it's been hard work. I've been working on it for about 10 years, and I've produced two books on it. And what I'm trying to do, it's a bit of a long shot, is persuade Christie's in the 50th anniversary of the 666s to actually hold their hands up, admit their mistake, and change their minds. Now, as I say, so it's a bit of a long shot.
Sounds like campaign, but Chloe is nodding in a sage way, which means, yeah, we should do this.
Justice for the ball.
Justice for the ball.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you know where the real ball is, then?
No, to be honest, William, I wasn't really concerned. What I was worried about, it was just... It's so blatant, this. I mean, first of all, Christie said Glamorgan, who Nottinghamshire were playing back in 68, were being supplied with balls by Duke and Son, and they weren't. They were getting them from Stuart Surridge. And they also said this was the third of three balls used in the over. And Malcolm Nash says, Graham, I bowled one ball, and it was a Stuart Surridge. And can you believe this? The BBC filmed it, and on the film, you can see the ball. The first two balls go out of the ground. They come back. You can see the balls coming back. Yeah. So for Christie's to say that it's the third of three is absolutely outrageous. Sorry, I'm...
Blatant fibs.
Yeah.
Christie's
right, okay.
Not given a right of reply. We'll give them a right of reply. If anybody who's Christie's listening, feel free to come back. You know, we'll have these sort of work our way through that. It's going to be a story that will run and run. And in fact, I can actually see a sense here in which we can have a little bit of synergy because, William, I'm sure you could actually write the screenplay for the movie of the 666s, Ball Mystery, and Chloe could sing the soundtrack.
Yes.
Yeah?
That would be fabulous.
Now, what's interesting is that when my book came out 5 years ago, how's that? I had interest from two theatre directors, one in Nottingham and one down in Swansea, to turn the book of How's That, the 666s, into a play. But unfortunately, it never materialised.
Waited for this moment.
And that's why I'm going out on this tour of all these literary festivals.
Are you getting up to Edinburgh?
I'm not.
That's unbelievable. No. Sad. Never mind. Edinburgh's lost.
So what do you do, William?
Oh, I write books, I write screenplays, sounds great. So what about Nash? How does he feel that his moment in history is defined by his six dud balls that all got slogged for six?
Well,
all he'll be remembered for.
Well, it's funny you should say that, William, because he's just literally in the last month or so brought out his memoir called Not Only But Also, My Life in Cricket. And it says, I think it's a very clever title. It's nothing to do with me. He did offer me his life story about 4 years ago.
I don't want to chip in needlessly, but wasn't that actually copyrighted by Peter Cook and Dudley Moore?
Well, it might have been copyrighted, but it's out. It's
good
called,
grief.
But it's not only Gary Sobers, but Malcolm Nash. And not only the 666s, but a terrific first-class career in county cricket, which is what Malcolm Nash had. How does he feel about it? I think, actually, William, to be fair, He came to terms with it pretty soon after it happened, and I wouldn't say he's dined out on it, but he quite likes the notoriety, the celebrity, the status that goes with it. But I think what he is unhappy about, and this is why I kept going with this, he said to me, Graham, I'm getting fed up with people at my local golf club coming up to me and saying, hey, Nashy, how much did you make of that 26,400? Because it's quite clear that the ball is not the real ball. And I did try to help him, and I suggested that he wrote to Lord Linley, the Queen's nephew, who was chairman of Christie's, which he did 3 years ago, but got no joy from them at all.
The campaign is there. Meanwhile, proving that Bill actually is total simpatico with this, if we look around at his latest Facebook update, we see Bill Coles at Lord's Cricket Ground with his revolutionary new cricket drive, inspired indeed by Tiger Woods. So that's a wonderful world in which he can actually experience the joys of virtual reality. There indeed is William Coles there with his virtual headset on. Just to confirm, Bill, that is you actually wearing that headset?
Wearing a headset.
You haven't got a stand-in for you for the day. What exactly were you doing?
You put on this virtual reality headset and you took a little stick in your hand, which was a bat, and there you could see the bowler coming, giving you six balls at Lord's. And, I tried to slog every one and made about 12, I think. I beat my son, which was the main thing.
Yeah, he's very competitive. It's a father-son thing. It's consistent.
Oh, you can understand that. Yeah, you can understand that.
The tennis is equally challenging, but at least the cricket work. Well, well done, William. I'm very impressed with respect to that. Would you like to find out where Chloe Rose is performing in about 24 hours from now, after obviously Croatia have been dispatched and we've actually moved on to another event in Moscow?
Yes, tell me. Is she off to St. Petersburg?
I wish. That would be fabulous. I am in Cleethorpes Fish and Chip Place. So
almost
if you like fish and chips, it's almost as good. It's a counting house in Cleethorpes. I will be performing tomorrow, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. And you're welcome to come along. Bring your friends, you know.
I think, to be fair to William, it's a long way from either Edinburgh or London to Cleethorpes.
It's fine. It's okay.
Well, on the other hand, I've never been to Cleethorpes before, so maybe this...
I think if you go there,
I've been looking for.
I think if you go there, William, you'll never go back.
No, you will for the fish and chips, though.
Clearly,
fabulous.
And, as I'm heading off to Saltfleet in the very near future, I see another midweek drive out. Former Miss Lancashire, of course. That's Eva MacDonald, who's doing fine stuff over there. We've also been talking about coming to see you in Edinburgh, William. So hopefully we'll catch up with that sometime. I'm looking maybe in August, possibly not for the festival, but sometime that we might well sort of drop by if you'll have us, of course.
Yeah. You can do it all from my front room. It's a big room, too. You'll like it.
That did kind of cross my mind. We can actually, take the show on the road. We're at the Great Yorkshire Show yesterday. Why not, indeed? It's good stuff. But we now need to ask you those last two questions. In fact, Chloe, go for it.
Did you enjoy our telephonic link?
Nice. Good. Yeah.
Yes,
customer satisfaction.
I loved it. And I hope you enjoy Cleethorpes tomorrow.
Oh, thank you very much. And will you be back on the show? Yes, you will, I'm sure. I'm not even let
you
answer that.
Yes.
You're fabulous. Great.
It's the positivity that always impresses me. Definitely. Up next, another contributor to the New York Book Festival. That will be the wonderful Gareth Baker. And a segue from the Three Lions, Badil Skinner and Lightning Seeds number to a fantasy writing workshop has got so much material written into it, I won't even go there. But Gareth Baker, you will be talking about fantasy writing in Millgate Community Centre on this Saturday, July the 14th, between 10:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. at the New York Book Festival. Welcome to the programme, Gareth Baker.
Thank you.
And curiously, Gareth, your family are going to be watching the game, but you're not so interested, really. Why is that, pray tell?
Well, football.
Interested
in the football?
Yes.
Yeah, if it's on, I will probably end up getting drawn into it. Mm. I think, ultimately, that's the thing.
playing it cool.
If I got into it, I'd be into it far too much.
Right. So playing it cool, even though your namesake is indeed the man who's given waistcoats a whole new meaning to the world. You've got your Gareth Southgates, you've got your Gareth Baker. Sometimes people, I mean, this is the reason why clearly Gareth Baker claims he had car challenges, which is why he's not in the studio. He's managing a football team. Your secret is out, Gareth. It's all been sorted. You're going to have to get on the jet, do the fantasy writing workshop, and then fly back, obviously, in time for the final.
Completely rumbled.
Exactly. We've got one of your fellow, fellow contributors, one of your fellow wonderful performers, presenters, general hosts, general acts, the talent, shall we say, that is at the Newark Book Festival in the studio with us. Of course, that's the wonderful Graham Taylor. Sorry, it's not Graham Taylor. Let me just say, sorry about this, Graham.
It's all right, Alex. It's been a long day, isn't it?
It's been one of those days where we've thought, where are we actually going with respect to this one? Graham Lloyd. Think of the bank, quite simply.
That's right.
Think about the cricketing scenario. There's so many connections.
I have no money, but think of a bank.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the horse that's riding over the hills, etc.
Oh, yeah.
Still, never mind. But share with us, Gareth Baker, please, what would you be doing with this fantasy writing workshop?
Well, it's more kind of drama orientated. Mm-hmm. It's a workshop that I usually take into schools. So it'd be really interesting, because it'd be a very different dynamic, perhaps a smaller group of children rather than 200 children all squashed in a hall. Basically, we've got a box, several boxes of objects, and we're going to use those to come up with a plot for a fantasy story together. Some of it we will act out. We'll create some characters, and it'll be like a saving the world plot from some great evil, a bit like Indiana Jones or Lord of the Rings.
Sounds like the sort of thing, actually, Chloe, they might have got up to at Grimsby Institute of Higher Education when you were graduating with a BA in performance.
Yes, I absolutely love drama. So as soon as I heard him say that, my ears sort of pricked up and I thought,
eyes lit up, ears pricked up.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's it. I thought, it sounds great. It really does.
But unfortunately, you probably won't be able to get over to the Newark Book Festival.
I know.
But never mind. It's okay. It's the reason we couldn't actually get it. And interestingly enough, this is 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. on the Saturday. Now, does that not actually come along? When are you performing yourself?
I'm performing at the Civil War Centre at 10 to 10:30. Sorry, from 10 to 11.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm afraid we're in competition here.
This is
not a good idea to have two people on who are actually...
Where do you go? I mean, torn between...
I would hate to think people came to see the first half of my talk and then thought, oh, this is no good, I'm going to go and see something else. But who knows?
At the end of the day, it just proves the fantastic work that Sarah's put together as programming the New York Book Festival, that there is literally something for everybody.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic lineup from what I can see.
So, the Millgate Community Centre, the Fantasy Writing Workshop, where you're constructing a whole range of bits and pieces. Mind you, Gareth, would you be introducing a cricket ball in there?
Well, I could try and slip a cricket ball into one of my box of artefacts, I guess.
Because then you could report back, you see, and find out what sort of happens from that. Perhaps that's just too much free association for me, but just never mind. Have you done this before at the festival, Gareth? Is this your first festival, second festival? What can we actually expect in terms of your contributions to this year's Newark Book Festival?
Yeah, I was there last year as part of the Literature Quarter, which I'll be there this year as well, selling my books. So, you know, if you're aged between 8 to 80, but... Seriously, if you're between sort of 6 and 12 and you like sort of science fiction or fantasy stories, then come and find me in the Literature Quarter near the Town Hall.
I mean, I was there last year, and I must admit there's some outstanding work that's actually there. I'm hopeful I'll be there certainly on the Sunday, maybe even for the Friday as well. So we'll cover a few sort of bits and pieces from that, and I know it's going to be an awesome system.
But you won't be there on Saturday? Oh, Alex, come on. You're talking to two people who are going to be there, and you're not going to go and see either of them. What's going on?
If only I wasn't torn between the University of Lincoln Open Day that's here, where my commitments, unfortunately, I need to be here to explain to any students who might be interested in saying, we want to go and... I know. It's just the way things
well,
are
look,
actually...
I'd just like to say to Gareth, we have never met. I hope we'll meet tomorrow in some shape or form, but thank you very much indeed for the retweet of my tweet about the Newark Book Festival, Gareth.
You're most welcome.
That's, you see, it's always seamless. It's like seeing that...
I'm really interested in Twitter because I've spent a lot of time trying to promote my talk, and you get the odd tweet, the odd like, but you never actually know. Do you find, Gareth, that it's a useful publicity tool or not?
Yeah, I found it quite useful for connecting with tweeters. A tweeter is a teacher who tweets. You know, there's
right.
a whole universe of really passionate primary school teachers out there who tweet about
it. Haven't they got more bureaucracy to be sorting that themselves and paperwork to be doing as opposed to tweeting? Sorry.
Well, yeah, maybe. So yeah, it has been really useful for me to connect with other children's authors and
yeah.
other patrons of reading, as well as, you know, connecting with schools and retweeting and sharing each other's information.
But I'm just wondering if it actually puts bums on seats, you know?
That's a difficult one to sort of measure, really.
Just hold that thought, if you will, because we've just seen a new attendee who's been waving at the door. Chloe, if I can invite you to actually open the door. We have a special guest who's just popped over to actually say
something. Hang on, even more special than me and Chloe.
I know, it is pretty astounding. But she has actually graduated with a first-class honours in journalism from the University of Lincoln. So I think it is very important that when we manage to coordinate this whole thing through, it'll be an awesome piece to work through that. In fact, take us round to that, just in case Chloe's having one or two difficulties with the door. We'll play Chloe Rowe's number, Golden Dreams. Stay with us, Gareth, and we'll be back with you in a few moments.
OK.
And all that you
I think it deserves a round of applause. Yes, let's go for it. Yes.
Yay!
Chloe Rose, Golden Dreams, amazing. What did you make of that, pray tell, Gareth Baker?
It was very calming.
Exactly.
Very calming.
The sort of thing you need
to... He's being very diplomatic, isn't he?
He isn't.
Build your way through the process. That's the essential eye of things. Be calm, be sorted, be centred, be in the moment, live in the moment, experience
exactly.
that sort of moment of day-by-day system.
Who is writing Alex's scripts? Or is it just coming off the top of his head, is it?
We like to extemporize a scenario. It works our way through it. Who is writing any of our scripts that
That's
we've actually got to? I mean, this is the key thing. I mean, who, for instance, actually came up with this particular line for our voiceover person?
Glinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
And Tessa's with us in the studio for the first time since officially graduating with a first-class honours. Enjoy.
Well, that deserves a round of applause.
She took that dissertation and whacked it out of the ballpark, and indeed other matters as well. Gareth, do you have a website or anything else you'd like us to promote briefly so that people can actually look ahead to possibly catching up with you on Saturday at the New York Book Festival, or indeed finding you later on in life?
Yeah, of course. It's gareth-baker.com, but it's probably easier if you just Google Gareth Baker author.
There we are. Now, as we said at the start, it didn't seem as though you were hugely committed to the match this evening, but if it's on, you might find yourself drifting towards the television screen, or not, as the case may be. But whatever you choose to do, just be happy, Gareth. That's the important thing.
I will. That's good.
Have you had go on.
I did wish the boys luck tonight. It would be nice, wouldn't it?
But you won't be watching, Gareth.
Because he's the manager. He said he is Gareth. No. Gareth Baker, Gareth Southgate. You know, clearly there.
I realise you're not wearing a waistcoat tonight, Gareth, but surely in about 1 hour, 20 minutes, you'll be sitting down at home watching the football. Surely.
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not going to commit.
He's chilling out, clearly, on that sort of basis. Actually, Tessa, because clearly getting back to Glinton, even if you left now, I mean, Chloe's going to have to leave in a few moments to head off to the joys of Cleethorpes, but what's your own sort of pattern going to be?
I'm very lucky because I still have my flat here in Lincoln for the end of the month, so I've only got a 5-minute walk home.
So there we are, so Tessa can stay for... Tessa can stay to play. Yay!
Yes.
Wonderful. It's great stuff. Chloe, would you like to put those last two questions once again to Gareth Baker, please?
Did you enjoy our telephonic link, Gareth Baker?
Yes, great fun. Yeah.
Lovely, I'm glad. I'm very glad.
It's always easier face-to-face.
Well, listen, don't blame us, blame the Prius. I mean, that's what I have to say. It's not us, it's the Prius. There's another little line there you can feel free to use and incorporate. Still to come, we're going to be listening to the piece of poetry that's all about the President of the United States.
You've got that with you, haven't you?
No, I don't, actually. I thought you might have actually had it committed to memory. Well, never mind.
No,
we'll talk a bit about that.
I haven't got that.
We'll certainly talk more about the Six Sixers book. How's that? The Six Sixers ball mystery. In fact, specifically coming up with John Wenham, who is our official umpire and, indeed, a siren coordinator of events and such like. But, Chloe, it looks as though we're going to have to say happy trails.
It's a goodbye for now, but...
Yes.
It's coming home.
Oh,
all right, remember
God.
That.
I knew somebody would get that line in somewhere. You've been working up to that, haven't you?
And that, frankly, indeed. At the Counting House in Cleethorpes tomorrow, is the name of the game.
make me feel, and you make me show what I'm trying to conceal. If I trust in you, would you let me die?
That knew nothing about cricket. There's a rumour going around. All I've done in my life is hit six sixes. Because it seems that way. Nobody don't seem to realise that I did a little bit more than hit six sixes. And he's done it!
There was numbness in the crowd. There was all sorts of things going on with the members. Yeah, there was this murmur, this buzz of, oh, wow, we've just been in front of something special that's happened. I was a bit shell-shocked, really. But, I mean, what can you do? What you can do is sit down and cry in the middle of the pitch.
Hitting six sixes was never at any stage until that last ball on my mind. Because it virtually seemed impossible. And he's done it! When you consider that cricket was played for so long and it was never done, I can't see how I could think that I was going to do it until that last ball.
And my goodness, it's gone way down to Swansea. What an over. What a batsman.
What an omen, what a batsman, what an umpire, you might well say, as we welcome to the midweek drive our ace umpire extraordinaire. It's John Wenham. How are you, John?
I'm very well, thank you very much, Alex.
Marvellous. Now, John, you still umpire, and strange enough, or not, perhaps not so strangely, you significantly remember that whole day when Gary Sobers became the first batsman to hit six sixes from six deliveries when he smashed 36 runs off Malcolm Nash at Swansea in 1968. Share with us, what were you doing?
I was sitting on my city at home, actually, watching the television. It was a John Player League, 40-over match per side, played on a Sunday afternoon, and very entertaining.
However, Did you ever suspect that 50 years later we might have actually had a mystery of the ball itself? And the very fact that in the Six Sixers ball mystery, the one sold by Christie's for a world record £26,400 at an auction in 2006 might have been not the real deal, might have been fake?
Well, I wasn't aware of that. But now you've said it, there was some talk about the missing ball very soon after the match, because somebody who struck it very hard, Garfield Sobers, wanted it as a sort of souvenir.
Well, this is clearly why we have our ace freelance broadcaster and journalist Graham Lloyd in the studio. I think, actually, you may well have heard a phone piece we did with Graham back in a couple of years ago when you wrote about the whole Six Sixers event, Graham. But it's a chance now for you to actually find out a little bit more using that umpire-like zeal, which you still bring to matches even today, John Wenham, to actually talk about this whole thing. Literally a whodunit, but with a ball instead of a body, Tessa.
Right. Well,
exactly. Yeah, precisely. The field, so to speak, is over to you, John Wenham. What questions would you like to put to Gareth about to Graham? You see, it's unbelievable.
Well, there was
sorry,
one
to Graham.
Question that sprung to mind, and I couldn't quite pick it up on your when you played it through earlier. It was either the third ball or the fourth ball. He was actually caught on the boundary, but the fielder overstepped.
Actually, John, it was the fifth ball. What happened was the first two balls went out of the ground. One smashed into the cricketer's pub. The other one went over mid-wicket, but they both were returned to Malcolm Nash. The third one went down to long leg. The fourth one... the third one went over long off, fourth one down to long leg, and then it was the fifth one. And what happened was Gary Sobers hit the ball and Roger Davis caught it on the boundary. And that season, the law had been changed about the taking of a fair catch. And it meant that because Roger Davis, part of his body fell over the boundary rope as he was taking the catch, it meant it was a six and it was not out. As simple as that. So if that rule about the taking of a fair catch had not been changed that year, we wouldn't be sitting here now discussing the Six Sixes, because that fifth one was the crucial one. Sobers was already to walk. It was up to the two umpires. And if you've ever seen the Six Sixes footage, you see the two umpires are clearly not sure what to do. They both knew the law had been changed, yet they came together and had a little conference in the middle of the wicket. And in the end, I think it was because the Glamorgan players said to Eddie Phillipson, one of the umpires, "Oh, come on, Eddie, get on with it. It's a six." And he suddenly put his hands up and said, "It's a six." But it was the fifth one that you mentioned, and it's obviously a really important delivery by Malcolm Nash. So he actually got Gary Sobers out, but because the law had been changed, it wasn't out because he fell over the boundary rope.
Could they not have been done for grammar alone in terms of employing a double negative there? I mean, not out. I mean, it sounds very...
No, that's me employing that. Awfully sorry. I thought, as it came to me, I thought, this is a double negative.
There is no alternative.
No,
sorry. Sometimes you just have to get that...
Alex, I could have said he wasn't not out, but I thought he was not out. But I take your point.
Sorry, John, it's still over to you, good self. Feel free to come back as you wish.
May I ask John a question?
Of course.
John, you know, as an umpire, it's quite clear that when you're umpiring and a ball goes out of the ground, if a different ball came back, wouldn't the bowler say to you, this is not the ball that I was using before?
Well, the umpires themselves... inspect the ball regularly anyway.
That's right.
So they would know. But yes, the bowler has every right, through his captain, to express that it is possibly the wrong decision or the wrong ball or whatever.
Yeah. You see, what happened was the last ball was knocked out of the ground and eventually it was brought back. But you talk to any of the players who took part in this. One of my concerns is that Christie's, in their lot notes, said that this ball that was sold for £26,400 was the third of three balls, and the first two balls were allegedly returned to the umpires. But if you look at the official BBC Wales footage of this, you can see the first ball is knocked out of the ground. It comes back to Nash. The second ball is knocked out of the ground. You can actually see it being thrown over the wall, over the heads of a couple of youngsters, and given back to Nash. And this is what I find so frustrating about this. The Christie's lot notes are, frankly, erroneous. They're just full of lies, basically. And at the end, the umpire was asked, when the last ball went out of the ground, the umpire was asked, do you have any spare balls? And he said, no, we haven't got any. So Gary Sober said, right, well, that's it, I'm declaring. And he walked off. And so the role of the umpire in all this is really quite crucial.
Has anything similar ever happened to yourself, John, in your umpiring career?
Well, it hasn't, actually, because usually we play on vast fields, and if a ball is lost or whilst we're continuing playing with the spare ball, which is provided at the beginning of the match, the spare batsmen who are waiting to come in will nip around and see if they can locate it. Mm. So usually the ball is returned.
Gentlemen and players all over again, really.
Yeah.
Tess, I mean, to a large extent, this is extraordinary. I'm not the world's greatest cricket fan, but from your own perspective, any thoughts on this?
Well, I don't know, really. I mean, no. Cricket, I'm not an expert on cricket, I've got to say.
Yeah.
So listening to you was, I was trying to learn while I was listening to you.
But the key thing is, it's not about a it's not about cricket.
It's about the cricket ball.
And okay. Why did five of the nine people involved in the sale of that ball to Christie's refuse to speak to me when I was writing my book? That's one of the questions.
Yeah.
Why didn't Christie's ring up Malcolm Nash and say, Malcolm Nash, you bowled the ball to Gary Sobers. What was the make of it? And if they had have done, he'd have said, it's a Stuart Surridge. And they would have said, well, the one we've got here is made by Duke and Son, so it can't be the right thing. But they didn't bother. These are the questions. It's all about human behaviour.
Do you know, do you have any inkling as to why they probably didn't contact you?
I mean, my view, quite simply, is that...
Always go to Tudor Hall, the National Civil War Museum, Appleton Gate, between 10 and 11 o'clock on Saturday the 14th of July, to find out details about that.
There we are.
There is one point here that... If I could just come in one minute. I thought the Dukes were the balls that were only reserved for test matches.
No, that's not true at all. In the 1960s, a lot of the counties used Dukes, and they used to have the name of their county imprinted on it, a stamp. So the ball that was sold by Christie's said Duke and Son, Nottingham. If you played for Kent, it said Duke and Son Kent, Duke and Son Derby, Duke and Son Leicester. But the point was, John, that Glamorgan only used Stuart Surridge balls because Glamorgan's scorer owned a sports shop. His name was Bill Edwards. He owned a sports shop just down the road from St Helens, and he had an exclusive contract with Stuart Surridge. And I know that from talking to all the players, and also I talked to Bill Edwards' widow, Elizabeth, and Stuart Surridge's son, Stuart, and they confirmed that Glamorgan only used Stuart Surridge balls. A lot of the other counties did use Duke and Son.
How interesting. Wow.
And this, John, is the reason why the talk is frank and astonishing. It might have just been frank. It could have been astonishing, but it's frank and astonishing.
I'd just like to
say... It's unfortunate that the actual footage on, as I saw, black and white TV, it wasn't sort of clear enough to really... examine if there was a different colour of a ball.
No.
It was either a black dot flying or...
A black dot flying? Or a white dot flying, depending on your point of view. Monochrome.
But what you could see, John, and in fact, if I've got time, have I got time? Yes. For the last 40 years, I've been a journalist, and this is the most amazing story I've ever come across. And one of the most amazing things was the fact that it was filmed by the BBC quite by chance. They were covering the game in the morning for viewers in Wales, and then in the afternoon they were providing live inserts into the grandstand programme from London. And round about tea time, grandstand came through and said on talkback, hello, Swansea, it's London here. Just to let you know, we're coming off the air soon. So you can stand everybody down. Thank you very much indeed for all your contributions, but you can let everybody
go away.
Yes, go away. Exactly. Now, one of the cameramen, John Lewis, said to the director, John Norman, he heard this on his headphones, and he said, John, do you think we could carry on recording? I'm a big fan of Gary Sobers, I'm a big fan of cricket, and I'd like to film him through a fixed lens. So John Norman said, OK, everybody, stay at your posts. He said to the commentator, if we're carrying on recording, we might as well have you carry on with your commentary to Wilf Wooler, the commentator. So they all carried on recording, and a couple of minutes later, the six sixes happened. Yeah. So it's a sheer fluke that it's actually been recorded.
Although some may say there's no such thing as coincidence in the universe in which we live. But
it was meant to be.
It was meant to be. John, has that whetted your appetite to, if not attend the talk, then certainly to get hold of a copy of How's That, the Six Sixers Ball Mystery?
Yeah, well, it sounds very interesting, and I'd like to have a review of that one, yes.
I think we'll have you reviewing that before too long. It's amazing. Who done it but with a ball instead of a body? Lovely line. That's great. That's
kind of
catchphrase in so many ways. Tessa, as a first-class honours graduate, to be graduand technically until you actually have your full degree ceremony, so work our way through that. Would you like to quiz John Wenham, who, of course, you've met? You've seen him actually at work outside this very studio compiling the events. He'll be here tomorrow morning whilst you're over the other side of the tracks.
I'll be the other side.
Would you like to ask him those last two questions, please?
I would. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed.
That's good.
Good response, John.
It's good response. Nice. Very good response. Good. And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
I certainly will, yes.
Wow. Oh, fantastic.
Quite possibly while sitting in as well.
Don't build the parts too much, John, because sometimes we have contracts, we have a whole range of things to work our way through that. We've also got Mr. Zimmerman that's actually lined up now with, indeed, a selection of music that you have said, go for that one, Graham. Go for that one.
I just love Bob Dylan. I think he's been the most influential songwriter of the last 50 years. I was really chuffed when he won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2016. Mm-hmm. And
in the words of actually cricket balls belonging to anybody, if we use the third-person female aspects, the title, of course, would be...
She Belongs to Me.
She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She can take the dark out of the nighttime and paint the daytime black. You will start out standing proud to see her anything she sees. You will start out standing proud to steal her anything she sees. But you will wind up peeking through her keyhole down upon your knees. She never stumbles, she got no place to fall. She never stumbles, she got no place to fall. She's nobody's child, the law can't touch her at all. Egyptian ring sparkles before she speaks. She wears an Egyptian ring, it sparkles before she speaks. She's a hypnotist collector, you are a walking antique. Bow down to her on Sunday, salute her when her birthday comes. Bow down to her on Sunday, salute her when her birthday comes. For Halloween, buy her a trumpet, and for Christmas, get her head drunk.
And off he goes, harmonica at the ready, doing his stuff. You're listening to Siren Radio. It's the Midweek Drive. It's July the 11th, 2018. Going to be a very, very significant day for all sorts of reasons, not just because it's Waistcoat Wednesday. By the way, did you see anybody wearing waistcoats today, Tessa?
I haven't seen anyone. I did this morning on Twitter. There was pictures galore.
Even Professor Jason Whittaker, known for his waistcoat.
Was he not wearing?
He wasn't.
He wasn't.
I was very surprised. He was trying to be different, probably.
Tim
Rideout, are you wearing a waistcoat today?
Sadly not.
Good heavens. We've already identified the fact that our ace author, Graham Lloyd, is not wearing a waistcoat. Evidence.
I used to wear a waistcoat when I was younger. And I know Bob Dylan occasionally wears waistcoats.
Well, that's
I don't think Bob Dylan likes football. Or cricket.
Soccer, presumably. Soccer.
Soccer in America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll find out from Phil Linus later on in the production. Before we find out what... Four events Tim Rideout is going to be involved with at the Newark Book Festival. I know, it's phenomenal. Would you like to just give us a little bit of back information about your own singer-songwriter abilities when it comes to a variation on Bob Dylan's protest themes, but this time addressing the whole notion of the Christie's moment?
Yeah, I do this talk. It's a talk, but I also recite a couple of poems and I sing a couple of songs. And when I do one of my songs, it's called Buyer Beware. So I say to everybody, this is a protest song.
And caveat emptor.
Then I talk about, Bob Dylan. And I mention a guy called Neil Innes, who you'll remember, Alex. You probably won't. No. Neil Innes was a member of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band in the 1960s.
And the Ruttles. Let us not forget the Ruttles.
I'm going to say, he worked with Monty Python. He worked very closely with Eric Idle. He created a parody of... the Beatles, called the Ruttles. And he used to do this wicked impersonation of Bob Dylan. And he'd come out wearing a Huckleberry Finn sort of corduroy cap. And he'd have a harmonica holder with a harmonica in it. And when he started singing, he would blow randomly into this harmonica. But he used to walk out, he'd say to the audience, this next number is a protest song. I've suffered for my music. Now it's your turn.
That's brilliant.
And that always gets a laugh in my talk, and yeah. I just hope at the end of it people don't think, my God, we've been suffering.
No, of course not.
No.
Because, look, let's just dive back. I'm sure Tim will be... I mean, Tim, were you familiar with the Ruttles? I know you're a King Doctor Who fan.
So
you remember with the Ruttles. So you'd be quite happy to actually have 2 minutes and 3 seconds of the aforementioned Ruttles with I Must Be In Love. One day Neil Innes will come on the programme, I'm sure. Moving on, we are already speaking to the wonderful Tim Rideout. Tim, I always sort of had you pegged as clearly a Doctor Who aficionado. I think we first met, actually, at a Doctor Who event that was set up for a Lincoln Festival. Is that correct?
We did indeed, Alex. That's quite a few years ago now, wasn't it, with the amazing Graham Harper.
Yeah, well, Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning, exactly, Tessa.
Oh, Graham.
Yes, worked with him regularly. Yeah. He'd be, I mean, the potential with Bernadette Harper, of course, being French and Graham being English. Interesting times, all sorts of ways here. Four things that you're doing over the weekend for the Newark Book Festival. When I was actually attempting to guess which ones you were connected with, I think I managed to score about three out of the four. I was way off base with one of them, but I did start off correctly by saying you will be anchoring at Carriages Cafe on Sunday at 7 p.m. just after the final, actually. Curiously enough, you have the World Cup final sandwiched in between two of the events that Tim is actually anchoring. It's crime, magic and steampunk with Ellie Griffiths, above the Ellie, and George Mann, also quite lovely and regular presenter on Siren Radio, of course. So there's George Mann, Stone Tapes, Tessa.
Oh, he's right, yes.
George Mann
George,
from the Stone
yes,
Tapes,
yes,
exactly.
I know.
So, but crime, magic and steampunk. All you need is a bit of cricket in there and surely you've got the actual complete box set.
I'm sure that George could be persuaded to write a cricket-based novel. I'm sure that he would do that.
I think a co-writing. I'm thinking kind of Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman collaboration here, but in which both parties are happily alive and thriving, you know, between George Mann and Graham Lloyd. You know, so the possibility of cricket and magic.
I'd like to write some fiction. I've throughout my career, I've tried, well, once or twice and never really made it. So one regret I have. But.
It'll happen. Yeah. Well, the magic will be there. Yeah. One of our presenters.
Of course, Alex, you'll recall that Douglas Adams wrote a script called Doctor Who and the Cricket Men from the 70s.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Exactly. The great Douglas Adams, in which the whole concept of cricket was actually developed and taken as a whole alien life form.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the message is not quite as far out as we might have first seen. Anyway, so that was one of the events in which the growing number of ride-outs or ride-ettes that are actually out there will sort of want to say, where can we see Tim Rideout after we've actually mobbed Graham for more of a routine? Saturday, 7 p.m, Matt Haig, fantastic Matt Haig, at the Palace Theatre, Newark, Notes on a Nervous Planet.
Yeah, so, Alex, this is a return to the Newark Book Festival for Matt. At the first festival last year, Matt spoke about his latest novel. And Matt's a native of Newark. He grew up in Newark. So he's been very much a friend of the festival. So Notes on a Nervous Planet is his follow-up to his best-selling memoir about his own challenges with mental health illness called Reasons to Stay Alive. He's a fantastic speaker. He speaks very moving and very powerfully about mental illness and mental health and what we can all do to live better mentally. I'm just finishing Notes on a Nervous Planet and it's absolutely fantastic.
I think Humans was a fantastic book as well that he produced. I was fortunate enough to be at an event that Jill Hart from Linden Books had actually hosted with him, and that was very effective as well. So very nice sort. So that was two other things which I actually got correctly. I then incorrectly thought that you might have actually gone for Make Your Own Magical Land, but I don't think you're interested in that. And clearly when it was given to the fantasy writing workshop with Gareth Baker, Gareth already had sufficient fantasy elements and didn't need you either. I thought perhaps you might have been brought in a little bit left fields to actually host 50 Not Out the 666ers Revisited, maybe backing singer, perhaps. I would have thought Tim might have been there, but no.
I go solo.
Exactly.
I just feel with the material I've got, I don't want to.
You've got
that.
No.
It's all mine. It stands or falls by what I do.
He would come on, he'd introduce you, then it's going to go away, Tim. That's it.
I must just say, I went to see Tim and Matt Haig last year when he discussed How to Stop Time. I've got to be honest, it's the first book I've read. I've not read any others, Tim, but I really enjoyed How to Stop Time, and I really enjoyed your chat with him. And he just comes across, I follow him on Twitter, he comes across as a really nice bloke. Is that fair comment?
That's absolutely, you know, I think he is absolutely what you read and what you see of him, Graham. So, and How to Stop Time is an extraordinary novel. You know, he's written, as Alex said, Humans is a fantastic novel. The Radleys which is the everyday story of a family of vampires growing up trying to pretend to be ordinary humans. Mm. It's a great novel. He's a very, very talented man. And I think, Graham, you'll remember from the audience that the diversity of audience members in question,
yeah,
just kind of is testament to how widely read Matt is by so many different people. And of course, there's his Father Christmas stories as well.
That's right. The one question I asked him last year was about social media, and I see he's been on it again, and he had a review of Notes on a Nervous Planet, which he was very unhappy about, and it did seem to be a very, very, well, appalling review, because it was just basically poking fun at somebody who had mental health problems.
Mm. Yes, I mean, my take on that is I read those tweets and looked at the review. Notes on a Nervous Planet, one of the themes of Matt's book is about how we cope in an age that's saturated with social media.
Mm.
And my take on the review is, it is, you know, using kind of an appropriate football analogy, is it played the man, not the ball.
Yeah.
And I think it attacked Matt for, bizarrely attacked him for exploiting his own experience of mental illness. Well, actually, what Matt has done, I think, quite courageously, is use his experiences to help other people.
Absolutely.
And the evidence is he has helped so many other people by being so open about his own experiences. Notes on Nervous Planet is a really good guide to how we cope in a very, you know, in a quite a fragmented and disconnected world. So, and it's all about the kind of dealing with the challenges, the good and bad things about social media.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to get to the talk. It's at 7 o'clock, isn't it, tomorrow night?
It's 7 o'clock. It's 7 o'clock on Saturday at the Palace Theatre.
Sorry, on Saturday. Yeah.
You're time jumping again. Yeah. It's easily done.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
I've been reading how to stop time.
Exactly. Tomorrow, Thursday. It's all right. It'll happen. Saturday night we'll be there. Saturday, 14th of July, yeah, day before the World Cup final.
Okay. Thanks, Alex.
So, would you like to share the other two events that you're connected with and that you're anchoring, Tim, for the New York Book Festival, please?
Yes. So my first event takes place at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon at the Town Hall, and that's Literary Landscapes. And that's really been provoked by the fact that this year is Emily Bronte's bicentenary. So we're going to be talking about the importance of landscape in literature, with a specific focus on the Bronte. So we have Emily Midori Kowal, who's a co-author of A Secret Sisterhood, and she wrote about the Brontes and Jane Austen. We've got an expert coming from the Bronte Parsonage, but we're also going to bring Byron in because of Byron's Nottinghamshire connection. So we're going to be talking about...
He was there last year, Byron, the spirit of Byron. He was sat on, he comes in there. Honestly, it's as though Percy just was in a different world. He's like, you know, Shelley and the whole range of things. Why not Frankenstein 200 years ago since Mary wrote the whole system?
Yes, absolutely. And but I think there are plenty of events celebrating the publication of Frankenstein as well.
Can there ever be plenty of... I mean, you can always do with a little bit more. It's alive, surely.
Well, we could, but in that panel, Alex, I don't think. I think we're going to be very focused on the Brontes and on Byron.
I'm so tempted. I'm so tempted to turn up after the open day here and actually sort of do a photo and say, "What about?" No, I know, it's okay.
And then the other event that I'm doing is on the Sunday. It's another passion of mine, which is talking about Gothic literature, and we've got Laura Purcell, who is now known as the Queen of Gothic. She published a book last year called The Silent Companions, which is a massive hit, Radio 2 book club book. Her next book, The Corset, is due out in September, but she writes brilliantly disturbing Gothic historical novels. So we're going to be talking about why Gothic fiction is experiencing a resurgence at the moment, and kind of its engagement with all of the anxieties and disturbances that perhaps we're experiencing at the beginning of the 21st century.
Gothic Brexit, perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there are many, and that's at 11:45 at the Town Hall on Sunday.
Exploring Gothic Fiction with Laura Purcell and, of course, Tim Ryder, Newark Town Hall, as you rightly said, 11:45 to 1 p.m. on Sunday. Tremendous. Up next, Sarah Bullimore. Tessa, go on, use those skills and fantastic routines to bowl those last two questions. Probably for the first time he's actually experienced them on air, actually, because previously when I spoke to Tim, we've been on location at things like a book signing in Waterstones, other bookshops are available, with Sam Stone and company. But
yes, yeah, I was just going to mention Sam Stone and about the, you know, gothic and fiction. She's very good. Quite
tragically, she's not featured in the New York Book Festival this year. I just think it's amazing. Never mind. I'll have words with Sarah.
Never mind.
So, next time. Tim, last two questions.
Tim, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, very much.
He took time, yes, but he got there. It's like a satellite delay between this part of Lincoln and the other part of Lincoln, you see. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I'd love to. Yeah, no, I'd love to. I'm actually in London at the moment.
Oh, well, that explains the gap.
Well, that's why.
Clearly.
There we go.
Can I ask Tim a question? Tim, are there any tickets left for Matt Haig?
Yes, I'm sure there are, and I'm sure that if you contact the number in the programme, you'll be able to get tickets. I know they're selling well.
Do you think Sarah Bullimore might be able to answer that question?
I think possibly.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, if not, you know, what does a book festival organiser do unless sort of give Gwen's and says, are there any tickets available? You know, got any quo? Carrington McDuffie.
Ah.
Hot Sun of the Summer. Okay with you, Tessa?
Brilliant. Down to the water, and the sand was hot, and your touch was the sweet fire of a lover, and the ocean stretched out forever, and each day was long and clear. Summer, and we'd watch the girls everywhere were girls dressed for summer, and I was your girl. We were everything to each other at the edge of the world forever, and each day was long and clear. Sun to the hot sun of the summer, the hot sun of the summer, and the taste of salt in the air on my lips never faded. It was like a kiss balanced there where the water and the shore divided. This love, like a wave, we'd ride it. And I was by your side. We were walking down to the water, and the sand was hot, and the sun was the hot sun of the summer. Of the summer.
That's it then. Carrington McDuffie, hot sun of the summer, doing wonderful things. Sarah Bullimore, we have a question for you.
Oh, yes.
Have you got any tickets available for Matt Haig, Notes on a Nervous Planet, 7 p.m. Saturday, 14th of July at the Palace Theatre, New York? Or have they all gone sold out, being that is?
No, there are tickets available because we are in the big theatre this year. We would have been sold out if we were in the Town Hall.
You would have been sold out if you'd been in the Town Hall, but because you are in the big theatre, the Palace Theatre, New York, there are still tickets available. You can rejoice, Graham.
Sarah, It's Graham Lloyd here. I'd like to buy one, if I may.
So there are sales on air. And it's amazing. Absolutely. It's just, and no percentage taken whatsoever. So genius stuff there. Sarah, how is it going with a matter of, what, 48 hours? Less than that, 36 hours before the Newark Book Festival launches.
Good. It's good. I'm surrounded by boxes and bags and strange things. Toadstool balloons, fairy houses, Gruffalos, competitions, and many books, of course. Fairy wings, all sorts of things.
Boxes and badges and fairy wings. That's got to be an album title, surely.
Quite the need for a festival.
Could be my autobiography. Never mind. Okay, so Tessa, I don't think you're able to make the New York Book Festival, are you, this time?
I won't be able to.
And Natasha is still over in Japan, teaching English.
Yes.
Tragically, as I've already given my apologies to Graham, though, he hasn't believed me when I said I opened day at the university.
How can you have an open day on the day that the Newark Book Festival is taking place?
Well, exactly.
I'm sorry. Alex.
Not good enough.
No. No, it is something where I'd have to say above my pay grade, to be honest.
You mean you're passing the buck? You spent a lifetime doing that, Alex, 7 years.
It's sometimes you just have to realise that take on the battles you can win, and others just say, okay, let's just work our way through it. But I'll be there in spirit with you.
And I'll remember that when I'm standing there doing my talk. I'll be thinking, if only... But
would you like a cardboard cutout?
No, I would not like
it. Exactly. There we are, man.
I just want an audience.
You will get an audience.
I'm hoping we're going to get a few. So how are tickets selling for my event then, Sarah? Any idea?
They're good. I think we were on about 20 last time I looked back.
Oh, that's good.
For a few days. So we do really good with tickets. So all events have sold very well so far, but we get a fantastic walk-up as well, and especially in the few days before it, because everyone gets really excited for the weekend as well. We're hopefully expecting quite a lot more.
We almost had Civil War earlier in the production, Sarah, this Lincoln or New York Book Festival takeover of Siren Radio in Lincoln, when we realised, actually, that Gareth Baker, of course, is performing at exactly the same time as Graham Lloyd.
Not quite.
Well, almost, very much.
A very different audience,
yeah. I did try to suggest it probably will be different audiences, but then again, there is that competition, really, so...
we do it as in friendly competition, I suppose.
But then again, that's it's going to happen at Hay on Wye, it's going to happen on Edinburgh, it's going to happen at Lincoln Literary Festival. I mean, we're involved with that whole process and procedure, so...
Well, it's just like people booking weddings when there's a World Cup.
Precisely.
You know, why would they do that?
Why?
On as well when the World Cup.
You're walking around the World Cup.
There's enough people to go round to watch and
only 7 billion on the planet, and we try to work through them one by one. Anyway, Sarah, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Graham Lloyd about life, the universe, or indeed Tessa Snart, equally about life or the universe? Who would you like to go to?
Well, I will go to Tessa, actually.
Oh.
throw you there. So have you got a brochure in front of you?
I haven't. No, I haven't. I might do it in 1 second. Let's hold that thought.
Sarah, it's funny you should say that, because the first thing I did when I came in here, I said to Alex, do you have a brochure? He said, no, but I've got a list here.
Okay,
he's got the list over four pieces of A4. Here
I'm
we
just
go.
Just putting them in order.
That's very good.
Okay, yes. I now have a list in front of me.
Favourite event.
Personally, I go to the newarkbookfestival.org.uk, and then you can actually click on programme, and it's all there.
You can look on the programme.
Yes.
I found an event, Grow Your Own Fairly Famous Family.
There we go.
Quite like that.
Yes, absolutely. So we always make sure that we do street theatre part of the programme, and so that's going to be our Sunday, because I've been this year's Landscapes and Literature.
With an appearance by Peter Rabbit, I see, Sarah. Ooh. Comedy gardeners bringing you skillful, wholesome, fresh, five-a-day fun.
Yes, it's a cheeky Peter Rabbit.
Grow Your Own, a show packed full of tasty fruit and vegetable themes, juggling and comedy cookery.
Absolutely. So who knows what's going to happen, really, when they come to town. But there's all sorts of things. So we basically take over the marketplace, and Sunday's going to be our bigger day in the Literature Quarter area. We've got an emergency poet in the 1970s ambulance dealing out poem prescriptions. We've got performance by Nottingham Young Poet Laureate, who is currently right now We've commissioned her to actually write a poem based on the Nottingham literary landscape and scene, which she's busy doing right now for us. So we've got music and all sorts of things happening, lots of fun stuff.
It sounds wonderful.
It is going to be wonderful.
I believe,
Sarah, you might be doing a reprise of the book festival next week for Inspired On Air, if memory serves.
I very much hope so.
So there we are, Inspired On Air, a programme that just gets better and better, just as Sarah Bullimore's work gets better and better. And Graham, any questions you'd like to put to Sarah?
Yes, I'd just like to ask, I mean, from what I'm hearing from Alex, and I have to take everything he says with a pinch of salt, this is the second year of the New York Book Festival, is that right?
It is, Graham, that's right, yeah.
And how has it changed since the last one? Because it seems to me, I came to a couple of events last year, which is what, you know, where we met again. And from what I can see from this year, you've really expanded it, and it's growing all the time. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously last year I only kind of took over the festival from what it really was before, which was a bit of a different event and title and whatnot. I took over in end of February, so I only had a few months really to pull last year's together.
Yeah.
So this year it meant I had a full year, so we could properly have a look at what we wanted to do. And also because so many of the venues loved it so much last year, they all wanted more.
Mm.
And we had two new venues, so the Palace Theatre and Carriages Cafe wanted to be involved as well. So we really wanted to expand stuff and also to expand the programme that we had on offer for children, for 7 to 12-year-olds as well. So that was part of also including Gareth doing workshops and that as well. So, just slowly expanding out there. And because of that, this is why today is my last day in the office, because we're out and about on Friday as well. So
it's 3 days now, Sarah. I mean, is there a chance that it could actually extend to a whole week, 5 or 7 days?
I don't think so at this stage. I think it's enough to kind of fit it in. But what we do, one of the things that we really want to expand, depending upon funding, is to really look at that school's engagement programme as well and what we can do in the lead up with that.
Well, the great news is, sir, we've been joined by our Los Angeles correspondent, Phil Leonis, just chirping in with respect to Book Festival. How are you, Phil Leonis?
I'm excellent, Alex. Knee-deep in planning my crime, magic, and steampunk wedding.
Yay!
Yes! There you go.
Oh. You see, Phil,
you cannot follow that, Alex. I'm sorry.
Phil, you will be wearing your waistcoat for Waistcoat Wednesday as you support the Leds from across the Atlantic.
Love that it's referred to as waistcoat. Waistcoats. Sorry. In fact, I was having that very conversation with a friend of mine, like myself, a true Anglophile. Boy, so much to unpack here. But yes, as you know, several weeks ago, you asked me to predict that first round matches, and I picked Belgium and England. And so excited that all these weeks later, they were both in the semifinals. Boy, France and England, what a sexy matchup that would be. Can I say sexy? I think I can.
Hey.
It would be a sexy, sexy matchup. Whereas France and Croatia, I'm not even getting out of bed for that one.
That's really good. And it would be the Brexit final, wouldn't it? France versus England.
Yeah. Well, you know, imagine the world we live. Look, I have a little, as Alex knows, I have a certain fondness for the underdogs in sports. And I just think everywhere I look, the world is so topsy-turvy. Everything is upside down. For example, Aston Villa is not in the Premiership, but my beloved Crystal Palace is in the Premiership. That is insane to me. But then again, apparently the U.S. is no longer a part of NATO or the G7. And worse of all, I heard, Alex, and you'll appreciate this, apparently Donald Trump has scrapped plans for the United Federation of Planets.
It's a shock horror moment. I mean, all that brings us around to your piece of poetry, of course, about Donald Trump, which we can't read, but we can go into six sixes. So I don't know, Phil Leonis and Sarah Bullimore, have you ever encountered or enjoyed the joys of this cricket piece of poetry? Although, is it about cricket, or is it more about the six sixes debacle?
No, it's about the six sixes. Just to
fill in. Nice. That's not bad, is it?
do you briefly want to hear what the story of the six sixes is, Phil? So it will make some sort of sense when I read the poem. Essentially, a guy called Gary Sobers hit six sixes off six balls in cricket 50 years ago this August for the first time in the history of the game. And I've proved, and I've written a book about it, that the ball that was sold by the auctioneers, Christie's, is not the real deal because it's the wrong make, and it's sold for £26,400.
Sounds like a conspiracy to me.
Well, you can say that. I couldn't possibly comment. but it is a very interesting story. And one of the key things that irks me is that Christie's, they have this signed certificate of provenance from the batsman, Gary Sobers, but they didn't bother contacting the bowler, Malcolm Nash, who would have known what the make of the ball was before they sold it for £26,400. So I've gone and written a poem called Why Didn't They Ask Nash?
Sarah, are you ready for this?
I am indeed.
Phil, are you ready for this?
Can one ever truly be ready for it? I am literally on the edge of my seat.
Well, you just hang on there on the edge of your seat. One or two things I would just mention. When I started writing this poem, I had no idea that so many words rhymed with Nash. But count them. So are we ready? Here we go then. It's called Why Didn't They Ask Nash? The batsman was Sobers, the bowler was Nash, the game's greatest player, and Nash, a bit brash, he'd taken four wickets, no trundler of trash, while the superstar skipper to 40 had dashed. The stage was now set for this iconic clash. Ball after ball, they were ruthlessly lashed. Right out of the ground, the first two were bashed. Six after six, the swashbuckling blade flashed. Nash's hopes of five wickets cruelly crumbling to ash, as all around St. Helens his spinners were smashed. With infamy imminent and teeth being gnashed, his brain was now scrambled, a muddled mishmash. When he bowled the last ball, Nash became rather rash. Quicker but shorter, way down to Swansea it crashed, and history was made with pure power and panache. £26,000 on a wrong un was splashed, as Christie's research proved shoddily slapdash. They gained the kudos, the ball seller the cash. Sobers got nothing, there was no secret stash. But would he know the make? Why didn't they ask Nash?
Grand.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, no, you don't have to applaud.
No, no.
I hope there's some applause on Saturday. But,
yeah. That's incredible.
I think we've taken that. I'm sure they're applauding in Los Angeles as well.
Oh,
the truth is out there. Ancient Mysteries 3. It's got to be the cricket scandal.
Alex, there's no need for sarcasm. I mean, you know, we've got 10 minutes left of this programme. But thank you for allowing me to read it. Because every time I read it, I really enjoy doing it. And it's good practice. So thank you.
Phil.
Well, I mean, it's... we would be applauding just the use of the word panache if we in America knew what that word meant. But I love that there were, I don't know, what there were more than 15.
I counted up 17.
17, maybe?
Yeah.
17.
Yeah.
And then the variations on Nash. So my question, though, then, of course, is why? Why is it not the ball? Did somebody just kept the ball for themselves? I mean, we know that most of the masters that are sold at auction, you know, the great paintings are forgeries, you know, that most of the great masters hanging in museums around the world are forgeries. So, but somebody theoretically has the real one. And indeed, I always wonder, why would you ever put up a real master, risk it to the elements? Why wouldn't you just put up a impossible to tell copy? But why would they sell not the real ball?
Well, I'll tell you briefly what happened. The initial action of this guy Sobers, the man who hit the ball, I think what happened was that he pulled the nearest but the wrong ball out of his cricket bag in 1968, and as a result, that's what happened. Now, that was an innocent mistake, but I've got to be honest, I think a combination of naivety, less than diligent research and opportunism from a couple of members of the Christie's Sporting Memorabilia Department led to it being sold for a world record figure. Alex, you mentioned the word conspiracy. When I first started writing the book, I thought this has got all the makings of a conspiracy. But bit by bit, I worked my way through it. But that's what I think it was, opportunism and laziness, people not doing due diligence. And
in other words, business as usual. I mean,
absolutely.
Often conspiracies boil down to is it might be shocking the way people go about their business, but when you boil down so many of what seems to be a conspiracy, I mean, there might be a conspiracy in the sense that people covered up for for what happened, but it really is just business as usual. It reminds me of one of my favorite jokes. This juggler, wonderful performer Michael Davis, used to do when he would juggle a bowling ball, an axe, or you know, a hatchet, and a butcher knife. And he said that the hatchet was the actual hatchet that George Washington had used to chop down the cherry tree. only the handle had to be replaced, as well as the head. But it occupied the same space that the original hatchet once had. I always thought that was brilliant because, you know, it's fascinating having traveled so many places and to visit historic sites, and then realizing, thanks in no small part to modern technology and GPS, that historic site has been moved. For example, the OK Corral is now about a mile away from where it actually was. Checkpoint Charlie is a mile away from it where it actually was, to allow for an easier buildup of tourism infrastructure around it. If you want to see where London Bridge is falling down, of course, where would you go but Lake Havasu, Arizona, which is where London Bridge now resides.
And well, that's a bit more understandable, isn't it, to be fair, because it has been publicly declared that it's been brought over from London.
Yeah, but still, I wouldn't call it London Bridge anymore. I mean, I think that's it made its own Brexit. So it's funny that it really is. Look, we don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, do we? So if you think you own the ball that Nash used, then guess what? You own it.
That's a very fair comment, because the owner of the ball is now in India, and I've been in touch with him, and I've said to him, look, I've got all this evidence that proves it's not, he's not interested. He's got a certificate of provenance, and as far as he's concerned, he owns it.
Certificate
That's
of authenticity.
End of story. Yeah.
Really? That's so interesting. I don't think I could be like
back in the day when Phil came up with these words...
Congratulations, guys. Glinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map with Tessa Snart taking midweek drive-at duties to a whole new level.
And Lily Holloman delivered them, as we've just heard. See what I did there?
Yeah. There we go.
Tessa was an undergraduate. Do you want to formally on air congratulate Tessa, Sarah and Phil for securing a first-class honours degree?
Wow. Well done.
I've already done it in person.
Yeah,
Phil, here's your chance.
Phil said nothing.
What next then? What next
for me?
He's waiting for Phil Dearness to say something.
Yeah.
Are you still there, Phil?
I was very confused about the whole introduction. I thought somebody was congratulating me for having accomplished.
I did for a minute too.
Alex,
I'm a bit worried this is becoming like the cabinet. Absolute chaos here.
It is.
I mean, what's going on?
I feel that meeting we had at Checkers the other day was very good. It really paved the way for a sensible, coherent program.
And honestly, Alex, I didn't invent any of those words. You just said that I invented those words. Those words were all in existence. I just rearranged them in a pleasing fashion. But Tessa, so what does this mean, Tessa? What are we exactly congratulating you on?
Oh goodness! Well,
come on, blow your own trumpet.
I know. I'm
She's
not very good
first.
At it. I'm not. Yes.
She's got a first in her degree.
Yeah, I've been awarded a first for my journalism degree.
First class honours.
Yes.
There we are.
Well, that's what you want. I mean, nobody cares about second class. Or
oh, no, they do.
Hey, I got a 2-1.
Yes.
I got a 2-2.
You know, it swings
nobody,
and roundabouts.
Nobody remembers bronze medal winners. I mean, I don't know. I don't
it's
know.
The taking part.
All I can say is congratulations. Apparently, I've offended all the people there who are nowhere near as good as students as you are.
Oh, no. You see, there's all different factors that go into it, isn't there? So, you know.
Very gracious, Tessa. Let's hope Croatia can be as gracious in a few hours' time. It is time...
I just need to point out that if I've learned anything from the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, it's that winning is everything. And and we're winning again, and now, Tessa, you're winning. And and you're going to be winning so much, as our president would say, that you'll just be tired of winning.
Oh, wow.
So congratulations.
So what's your prediction for tonight's game then, Phil?
Yes.
Or the afternoon game, for example.
I predict nonstop tension with a smattering of nervousness and an extreme bout of nausea. That's what I'm predicting. And hopefully it will result in a victory. That's what I'm... Like I said, I don't know. It's just such a sexy final. It's got to come to pass. It's got to. We've got to have France and England. It is too perfect a metaphor for what's going on in the world right now.
And that brings us perfectly to the time where, Phil, you can throw those last two questions to Sarah. For completeness, please, take it away, please, Phil Linus.
Sarah, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive today?
I have indeed. Thank you so much, Phil.
And can we look forward to hearing from your good self again in the not-too-distant future?
You can. I'll be back next week.
Thanks to Anna Lewis, William Coles, John Wenham, Tim Rydert, of course, Sarah Blumhoff. Phil, has it been okay for you?
Yes, I'm really nervous about the match. So,
are you going to be coming back with us tomorrow morning, midnight your time, for the 8 a.m. slot?
No, I will not.
That's
I'm
all
going
right.
to be at a late night screening of a science fiction film I'm desperate to talk to you about. I will not, but I will file a report next week.
Fantastic. And Graham Lloyd, have you enjoyed your first full show with Midweek Drive?
I have, and I'd love to come back. It's been great fun. Seriously.
Look forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much.
Fantastic stuff there. It's been great. We'll have to end with Come On England. There's no other words we can actually say to sort of wrap up the whole thing, basically. So even in terms of America and so on. So after three, a one, two, a three.
Come on, England!
Didn't hear you in America, did we, really?
We didn't rehearse it.
It was very quiet.
We're going to have to take that one more time.
Shouting it on the inside.
He's speechless.
Why somebody would actually sort of feel that they'd be embarrassed about Los Angeles, open all the windows, shout out. Exactly. You know, so after three, a one, a two, a three.
Come on, England!